We're here on August 5th. Tom Wickham, Bob Howard, Wayne Drexler for our second interview. And Wayne, I'm just wondering if I could go back to the beginning. Before you took the job, even, you got out of college, you were in the military. You want to go through that area?
Well, yes, I guess so. I did start my teaching in Farley, taught 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th grades one time. And there was two of us there in the old building that's now history. And then that was kind of in its last days. It was still high school when I first started there.
What year was that?
1950. It was my first fall. School. I taught everything. I often remember that because I was the only teacher, and then there was a superintendent, and he did some other teaching. It was two of us, and it was pretty hectic because I remember I had about four subjects to teach, and then he came to me the last day and he said, "Can you teach German?" Well, I said I had a little German in school, so I got to teach German there besides, and I taught music and piano lessons after school and attended all the board meetings because I was the only one that would represent the school. So it was a good start. I taught there, and then I decided I better get some more education, so I went back to University of Iowa and got my master's degree, and then I came out looking for a job and decided that probably the best place was to get into the. I taught in Dubuque for a while, for one semester. Taught phys ed at a couple of the schools in there, but at the same time I was kind of looking around because I knew the county superintendency was going to come due. Joel Flynn had been there for 50 years or something, and there was a huge number of one-room schoolhouses still operating in the county, and so I went there, and I went to Max Clark was the superintendent at Dubuque, and I said, I'm here, and I'd like to get a job, but I said, I want you to know that if I get an opportunity to advance into this job. And he said, "That'd be fine." He said, "We'll do that." And so it so happened. He resigned at Christmas that time. And so the job was opened for the first year. And I applied. And I got the job on a 3-2 vote.
That's the first of many 3-2 votes.
I got to say that they were a great bunch of board members, and they all voted for me. They changed their vote then, and it was 5-0.
Was that January 1st of...
Of 1958.
Okay.
No. Yeah, 58. Correct. That's correct. So I stayed there, and that was an experience in itself because... I was just out of college. In those days, you only needed a master's degree to be a superintendent. And I was pretty green because I came into the county office down at the courthouse on the day after New Year's. And I was sworn in that morning about 10 o'clock in the morning. The president of the board came down and gave me the oath to take the job. And at 11 o'clock, 1 hour after I was there, I had about 15 people come into the office to want to know what I was going to do about school reorganization. And I kind of looked at them, and I'm thinking, I got to have a little time here to know what this is all about. So I made an appointment. I said, I've got things I've got to do today, but we can come back in a couple of days. And then they all came back. And some of the original guys like Deutmeyer and Bud Ross and these people were all pioneers at that time. And they wanted to get going on that because there was a law at that time that by 1960, all these rural districts had to be in a consolidated district with at least 300 students.
That law was passed earlier.
Yeah.
Probably 57.
Right? Yeah, right in that area. It was just new. And so they were there for all kinds of reasons. They were being forced into a situation. Taxes was one thing. They wanted to make sure that, you know, where were they to go? Well, that was a good question, because it looked like perhaps it was just going to be a Dubuque County school district, just one district.
So they knew they had to have a public high school.
Right.
That's probably key too, huh?
And with that many, and there was 61 school districts in Dubuque County at that time. Rural districts, except there were a couple. Dubuque, of course, was a big school district, and there were high schools
at Epworth
and Piasta. Had a little high school.
Piasta was public.
And that was Ann Farley had just give up and went to K-8. So it was, the time was right for change, and we had a lot of meetings, and we finally decided, I was there, kind of helped decide it, that we'd probably just go to two school districts. We'd go a rural one and a city one. And I had wonderful cooperation with the Dubuque people, Max Clark, the superintendent, and the board. They said, listen, we'll work with you on this. Whatever you want works out, then that's what we'll do. And so then the real hashing started. I was out literally almost every weeknight for about a year, meeting with people in the rural areas. Some of these rural districts, that's a story in itself. They hadn't had a board meeting.
Were the rural districts, were they kind of related to the townships, or how were they?
Well, in the old days, there was, it said that there had to be, the kind of law said you had to have a one-room school within a four-mile area, a mile each direction, so they could get there by walking to school.
One section out of every township that was supposed to be for education.
It just didn't work that way, though. There were all kinds of situations where anything you could dream of. A lot of times, if a little river or creek went through the district, that was the boundary line, you know, things like that. So then we started deciding, well, first of all, then the other counties around us decided, for tax paper reasons a lot, they really wanted to get into West Dubuque because they figured that was going to be a tax haven. And people in Des Moines started calling us a sham district. They would use that right to my face. You're forming a sham district. It won't have any kids. It won't have very good schools and that so forth. But we overcame that. But we did have multiple meetings with Jackson County, Jones County, Delaware County, and Clayton County all around us. And they weren't very happy to lose any of their people because they were paying taxes there and not providing any kids or very few. So it was a real battle, a legal battle that lasted probably a couple of years. Everybody had lawyers. Everybody was fighting. We were in court half the time. We were running to Des Moines to meet with the state board down there and those people multiple times. But we won those battles because finally agreed on it that as long as they were contiguous, meaning they were with us, connected to us, they could petition to get in, and basically they did. Big chunks of Delaware County, Jackson and Jones County, just a little bit of Clayton County, but we finally got through that battle, and then we had to start the battle of the vote. We finally got it divided into two areas. If you If you look at some of those areas over around Piazza, it's really jagged. You know, there was it's just one farm hanging on to so another farm could get in. But basically, it went pretty good in Dubuque County. As I said, Dubuque was very nice to work with us on that. And then we had to convince people to vote for it. It took a simple majority of the district. And it was touch and go because there was an awful lot of discussion about taxes, not much discussion about education. It was a work there.
But so when would that vote have been?
That would have been in the early 1960? Part of 1960.
Did they elect the board at the same time?
Well, what happened was first they had to get the district formed. And that was formed, that was in the spring of 1960, somewhere in that. And then following that, then there was a vote to get the board. And then everything fell in place on July 1st of 1960. That's when the first day of the operation.
So you had the board elected by then too.
Yeah, just like in a month before that or something.
Okay.
The board.
Okay.
And as far as myself concerned, by that time, I had gone back to being county superintendent. I had my job done. We had the district, and we had two in the county, and the county superintendency, however, was a kind of a ending situation because it was going to change. But I had just taken a new contract, a 3-year contract with a nice raise with the county board, and I was set for at least 3 years, and I was very content to do it. The pace slowed down. The district was formed, and my job was to come out, and I was going to swear the new board in and then step back and say, go to it. You know, you have to get a superintendent, you have to get some teachers, and you've got to do these things. And so I went back to Dubuque. I was cutting grass at night in my home in Dubuque. About 7:30 in the evening, I was out there cutting grass, and here comes two of the board members, and I said, well, what are you doing here? And he said, well, we want to hire a superintendent. So that's where I got my job. I understand. I didn't interview.
So were you hired by that July 1st, 1960?
Yeah. Then they said, come on out the next week, and we're gonna hire you, and we're going to start you on July 1st.
Oh, boy.
And at that time, there was
nothing.
Nothing. My first office was a closet, honest to God, in the old Farley School. It was about
third floor.
About 4 feet wide and 6 feet long. That was my first room, and I knew it was going to start on July 1st, and so first thing I thought, I better get somebody to write checks here. So Harriet Fees was the secretary. Her husband was secretary of the old Farley board, and he died, and she kind of had inherited from him. And she too thought she was done and she finished. And so I had decided then that I needed some help. So Ralph Buckman was the former superintendent down there at Epworth. He was superintendent and coach and custodian and you name it. There was a lot of support for Buck for to be the superintendent, which would have been fine with me, but the board wanted me because of my continuity of working with the building of the district. And so I said to Buck, I went down, I said, you want a job? He said, you're darn right, I gotta eat, you know. So I said, well, I need a principal. You're gonna be a K-12 principal at that time. And so at that time we got together, and the next day after he agreed, he walked up at noon. We walked up through Farley Street up to see Harriet Fees and said, would you like to go to work? And she was kind of astounded, but she started, and she went to work that afternoon, and that was the way we had.
So by September 1st, you had to have
First things I had to do was get some teachers. I didn't have any teachers at that time, literally. Now, there were some teachers, like in the one-room schools, I had to run some of them that first year, run 19.
You had been their boss the year before.
Yeah, okay. And I had to run them again because there was no way I could get started that fast. I think it was 19 of them we run that first year. And then we had some leftovers from the schools at Epworth and Farley. We were sitting in sort of limbo. They had contracts, but with whom they didn't know. So there was a number of them that we finally gave contracts to and got started. And it was a wild time because, you know, I remember we had a kid from high school, was going to high school, and lived way down south of Bernard. And I thought, well, how in the heck are we going to get him to school, you know, 30 miles from school? And those are the things that I had no buses. That's another story.
Well, did you have buses the first year? No?
No. No, we didn't.
But what did you do for money? I mean, do a district...
I had to put a budget together too. Yeah. That's another thing. I had to do that the first couple of weeks, and I got it in time to get to the county so they could levy the taxes.
Okay.
And all this was coming at one time, and Harriet was the only secretary I had for a long time. Then sometime in that first year, that's kind of a funny story too, we decided we had to have some buses. And in light of what happened later on when we got all the buses, I remember I contacted the one person out, I think Cedar Falls, to come over and show us a bus. So we made it. He showed up at the time of the board meeting. It was at Farley, and it was daylight yet in the evening. And he pulled the bus out, and all the board members went out, and we all sat in the seats, and we blew the horn and tooted the horn and everything, and it was quite an experience. And we had a long discussion and finally decided to buy one bus.
Would that have been for the first year or the second year?
That was during the first year. So it wasn't right at the very beginning.
Wow.
I often thought of that because a sequel to that story was quite a few years later, when there were all the kids, the heat, there were probably 7,000 or 8,000 kids, public and private schools, in our district at that time, in the 7,000s. And then the legislature passed a bill that said we had to hold private school kids the same as public school kids. And that happened in the spring, and then we had to get a bus. And so in that case, I remember a little funny story there. The bus man would come and sell us a bus a year, you know, maybe two. And this time it was probably in June, and I had the buses in the fall. And he come over, and I said, we picked out a bus, and I said, we'll take it. I said, I want 30 of them. And he bought quick. He never sold 30 buses in his life before.
Well, that was a little later than the early.
Yeah, that was earlier. That was just a bus story.
Yeah.
But going back on the first year, it was pretty hectic. We run the high school at Epworth and the high school at Piasta, and 19 one-room schools, Farley, and we had school, a kindergarten in Dyersville, and school in Cascade. These are in all old buildings that are all later tore down.
Was the Dyersville one right where the kindergarten is?
Yes. Okay. That's right. That's where it was.
And the Cascade actually had two, didn't it?
We had the old Chu Mansion in Cascade, where the runaway slaves used to hide.
That's not that museum, is it now?
No.
That was on the other side.
We tore it down. It's where, right where the high, the elementary school is.
Okay.
Is where the, it's called the
slave ship either.
We showed people all the time where they hid the slaves up in a room. Anyway, that was the way we started that first year, and we had somewhere around 300 or 400 kids. Most of them were kindergarten. Mm-hmm. Majority were kindergarten. But that's another story. Kindergarten didn't exist in Dubuque County, outside of Dubuque, at that time. The private school didn't have it, and the public schools didn't have it. So we went out and started. Remember, Buck and I would go door to door, knocking on doors and saying, "Do you want to send your kid to kindergarten?" And some did, and some didn't, and some said, "We'll see," and some showed up, and some didn't.
But you had to have 300 by the fall.
Had to have 300. We just made it. That 380 or something is all I think is all we had that first year.
And well, they had to find their own ride in too.
Yep,
they had to find their own.
Yep, they sure did.
In the meantime, that first year, you were also thinking about the bond referendum.
Well, yes. Right? So, well, the first year, yeah, we were thinking about it, but it was in the preliminary stages. I'm picking out places like Epworth was the big decision was where are we going to put the high school?
Yeah.
And that was a real knockdown, the first real battle we had, you might say, in the district, because it soon settled on Farley or Epworth, because they were in the middle of the district.
Yeah.
And there were strong forces on both sides, and the board was divided 2-2. And one, Mr. Deutmer, wasn't committee. And it went back and forth. There were meetings in Farley, meetings in Epworth. I didn't go to them because I didn't want to. I wanted a school. I didn't care where it was. But it went right on down to the last day, and we had a board meeting and said, we got to make this decision now. And so it went 2-2, and Mr. Deutmeyer says, we'll take Epworth. And that was it. And then the nicest thing happened. After a real battle, the two people that supported Farley said, we unanimously support this. Real good boardsmanship. Yeah. That's the way it was.
So you and Buck probably stayed away from those meetings
because
it was such, it was pretty political.
Right. Yeah, we did. And we stressed the fact that it had to be done, but, you know, it didn't matter.
But you had some... You had some influencing going on from the church, right, as far as the parochial schools and...
Well...
Under the table.
somewhat. There was other influences. There was territory influences. There were taxes influenced, and there was the religious thing.
You had Catholic high schools in an awful lot of cities.
We had seven Catholic high schools at that time. Yeah, seven at that time, running. And everybody was pulling different directions in that. But they finally decided that it had to be done and it had to be in one place. And one of the board members Dick Driscoll, his brother, was the superintendent of the Catholic schools at the time, and he made no bones about it. He wanted the building where it would do the least harm to the public school, to my Catholic school.
Yeah, and then also distance, you know.
Yeah.
Bernard was an extra 4 or 5 miles to Farley, I suppose.
But there again, the cohesiveness of the board was there. They had some tough decisions, and they'd always stick together.
Remember that the first election of those board members? Were they very contested or not? Or were those guys more or less worked?
No, they weren't contested.
Okay.
No, not at all. They were. It was. These are all people, basically, that had worked hard to get the district. The Rosses, the Deutmeyers, the whole bunch of them, and Ray Sherman. They all were pioneers on this, and they stuck together.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a...
That was a tough job for those guys, too.
But
the number of board members, was that...
Well, one time, there was some discussion on that. Do we need more than that? And I think I really staunchly said five is enough.
And you probably decide whether they'd be elected from everywhere or districts,
well,
too, right?
We had a... There's a law that kind of says you have to be balanced. And it was more or less... We knew the different areas, but the state actually picks the counts, the numbers, and you had to have it.
But like Dubuque district is pretty much wide open, I think.
I don't know.
Yeah,
for sure.
Districts, but I could see it in ours, as large as it was, and all those communities.
Yeah.
But Dyersville was a district by itself, because and then there was areas like Nuviana. Rickardsville up in that area is wide open, huge population, huge districts. Yeah.
Balance that. Yeah. Well, I think you did a good job on that because it's lasted for
forever.
60
well,
years.
Well, and then the other thing that came out pretty strong, there was a question on do we want voting it open? You could run any time and you know, vote from all, and definitely they wanted to go with districts, and that I think was a good thing. That never turned out to be a real big issue. Dyersville balked a little bit at some of our bond issues, and we used to kind of worry about their support, but other than that, it went pretty good that way.
Okay.
The first year went pretty good. Then as we came into the second year, at that time, we were working on the building of the, getting an architect and getting some things, and then they had to get a bond issue passed, another one. And that worried me, but it really went well. We carried the bond issue real easy. Mm-hmm. $3,200,000 bond issue to build schools at a high school, an addition in Farley, an elementary school, a kindergarten in Dyersville, an elementary school in Cascade, and an elementary school in Bernard for $3,200,000.
I read somewhere there was a separate issue for the bus garage.
Yeah.
That was, I think it was $11,000 for...
So they had a vote separate on that? Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I'd forgotten that, but I guess that...
They voted that in, too.
Yeah, they voted it in. I think it was $50,000.
No, it says $11,800.
Okay, I'm sorry. That must have been something else. But anyway, that passed, and then we started to grow. Then the growth years came. The second year, I think it was in the 500s, and then we went... And then right in those early 60s the private schools were going through some changes too. They were losing a lot of teachers. The religious teachers weren't there like they were in the past, and that added to the growth. Every year we were just growing like crazy, and I spent half my time looking for places to rent.
Yeah.
When did it become obvious that you're going to have to buy portables?
Well, we didn't have any other place to put them.
Yeah. Well, we opened the Farley school in 69, I think. Well, see, before that,
right?
Well, yeah, I was principal of the elementary from 65 till 69 when we opened Farley, and we had six portables behind the high school with
at that time.
The gangway, you know.
Yeah, that was like, it was like a little, was it six? I thought it was more than that.
There was one for each grade.
And there was a walkway down there, I remember, kind of a corridor.
Yeah.
And I used to kid the kids, I said, you're never going to get pneumonia around here because you've been treated for it. You're outside every day.
One other question I had, kind of going back to the beginning of the district, and I know there's been things said about it, but, and I know you got a musical background, you were used to playing bands, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of interesting, that whole concept. I know Phil Schmitz was hired probably that first year.
Mm-hmm.
And why don't you talk a little bit about that whole concept?
Well,
because it's worked pretty good, I'd say.
Well, the first year, the 1960, I was looking for something to create us, to something to look forward to build on. And it was pretty hard to do that with athletic teams because it takes a little time to recruit them up. So I just said it all myself. I said, let's get a band. That's something that people can hear and they can see and they can be proud of.
Like Phil, the Music Man movie.
Right. Phil Smits had worked 1 year in the Edgewood Colesburg School District, I think it was at that time. It was his first year. His dad was a talented musician from Dyersville. He used to play in all the town band and everything. And so I called Phil, and it was between him and the guy I played in the band with in Dubuque.
Steve Olds?
No, it was
Zimmer.
Well, no, Zim was another one. I played with him. But can't think of his name right now.
Yeah.
But anyway, I chose Phil, and I said, go to it, do whatever you can, build a band. And he started, and I can still remember those toots and squeaks that come out of that first band room over in the old Epworth gym. And that by Christmas time that year, the first year, he said, we're going to have a concert. And I can remember the people all came and sat up on those gym seats, kind of went up. And they marched out there, and they had black pants and white shirts and a red thing tied around their waist, a band. And they come out there, and they walked out, and they got a standing ovation before they blew a horn. And they did well, and that was the start of an amazing streak of things that filled in all the events he went all over. Another thing maybe that you get a kick out of, in those early days, the district, way back in the 60s and 61, I had the crazy idea that we should keep the school open on Saturday mornings until noon. And
I used to work.
Yeah, and Buck and I would get together every Saturday morning, and we worked till noon. And I remember this one day it was in the year before we opened the high school in Epworth. The gym floor was still not in, and we were going to move in that fall regardless. We had to be. We had to get them in there. Close the other schools, and so we were sitting over there one morning, and Buck said, "You know, we need to name these kids. What are we going to do? And what colors are we going to have?" And so we went through the list of all the high schools and the colors. The Dyersville had the Cardinals, and then the Cascade has the black and whites, and so forth.
Yeah.
And so we went through the whole list and said, "Well, we can't get any of those." And then finally, I think it was me that said, "Well, let's go black, white, and red. That way there'll be a little of everything." And Buck said, "Let's call them the Bobcats."
Okay.
And that's how it happened. We never discussed it again.
Didn't vote on it.
No vote. We had the first assembly when they got in the gym. All the kids got there, and he said, "Buck said you're the Bobcats now, and your colors are black, white, and red." And it was that's been there ever since.
Coincidentally, this past winter, I was contacted by the Athletic Association. Bud Legg is a guy that does a lot of their PR stuff. Anyway, he was working on a project. He wanted to record and archive all of the old high schools in Iowa and their colors and their nicknames. So I helped him dig up Epworth.
Fiesta.
Fiesta. And
there was Epworth. There was St. Paul's at Worthington. Yeah. There was New Vienna. Gary Owen.
Yeah.
Fillmore had a two-year program. Luxembourg had a two-year program. And Dars and Cascade had two high schools.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. Anyway, he's got it. He's got it pretty well completed. It's available on their website. So if anybody's interested, it's there. So.
Piasta kind of had a different history. I think they went back public and Catholic, didn't they, or something? I'm not sure. Well, I need to get involved in that, but it was St. John's High School for once in a while.
Well, when we were there, Mrs. Hall was the superintendent.
Okay.
Mrs. Hall, and she was a teacher. and Tom, you came into the program, but before that, I can remember the first year, Father Breitbach was the pastor at Piasta, and he lived across the street from the high school. And so he was part of this faculty.
And he taught government.
And he taught that. And I explained to him, I said, you know, you really can't be a priest teacher. He said, don't worry about it. He says, I take off my collar when I cross the street.
Well, he used to catch for the baseball team, too. Oh, and I said he was an ornery, tough competitor. Yeah. I've heard stories about it. Well, yeah, he was teaching that first
I
year.
I was a pitcher for Farley, and he would stand there, and he'd stick his arm out and get hit. And it made me so darn mad, so I knocked him down a couple times. And we became good friends. He understood that.
Yeah, I've heard some stories about him.
That's a true story.
I was playing golf with Janet Pitts. She's a whiter, and she went to Piasta there. Like when you were there.
I coached her first year.
Anyway, when she was in grade school, she said, I just remember the Mrs. Hall. She lived in the
school.
In the building.
Yeah.
And Janet said that for recess, in the spring, they'd make them, these little kids, they'd give them each a fork. They'd make them go out and dig up dandelions and weeds before they could play.
And Mrs. Hall was a piece of work. She was.
It was a fun time in the sense that we had something we wanted to build and. We had a lot of support, and I've always thought we did a pretty good job of bringing the communities together. I remember that first year, there was a, that first year when we had the high school, there was a girl there that had a boyfriend that they met, sort of, you know, friends in school. The story was they had a date, and she was from Bernard and he was from Holy Cross, and he come to Buck and said, where's Bernard?
Then he had to borrow his dad's car and drive 50 miles probably to pick the girlfriend up. Yeah, our district was unique.
Oh my God.
Well, Bob and I were talking about that on the way up. The first year I coached, Art Lamb was 7 miles south of Bernard. I remember one of those early years. That was a 27-mile ride. And then the Bender kid was over there by Sand Springs. That was probably another 25.
You know, that reminds me, too, of putting together the those bus routes in those early days. It was fantastic. You know, we had kids that were 10 miles apart, and you couldn't run a bus like that. So we had to, I had to do it, actually. I did all of the bus scheduling. I had a secretary that helped me. But we did all the routing, and in those days, I had a bunch of pins. Little red pins and green pins and orange pins, had them all in little boxes, and each one of the colors represented a school.
I remember watching you do that in the summer.
And it literally took, and then.
And you had the string.
We'd do that, and then.
Knitting string or something?
We'd get a bus route set up, And then I take my old Buick, I had an old four-holer, and I'd go out and I'd time it. Literally. And we would say, this is the first one, and set your time, and I'd drive down to the next one. And the time was 12 minutes, and then I'd down to the next one, and 2 minutes, and I picked up four here, and then how long it took, and then we'd come back and figure if that was a workable route. Quite a fair. And in those days, we had a lot more kids hauling than we do now. You know, it was a big numbers.
Yeah, the busing, I mean, in our district, Bob and I worked for a lot of years, and we know how key that was, mm-hmm. key component. You got the largest, well, the district's half the size of Rhode Island, and largest in the state.
Getting back to the sham district, they held us two in the Department of Public Instruction. I said to the state superintendent, I can't think of his name now, but at the time, he was a good friend, and I said, we're going to build a school there that's going to be better than anything else around there, and we're going to do it, and we're going to pass a bond issue, and yeah, we'll see it. This is sham district. And I said, okay, if we do it, you're coming and going to give the dedication speech. And he did. On a Sunday afternoon, when we dedicated the opening of the high school in Epworth, he was the speaker.
That was 62? 62, was it?
Well, it opened fall of 62.
Yeah.
Well, reunion I went to Saturday night was a class of 64, which they were juniors in that fall.
Yep.
So I taught all the juniors. They said there were 70 in their class. And, of course, I taught all the boys and girls phys ed until Hermie came in semester.
But I can't speak well enough about the early faculties. Gosh, we had some holdovers from Epworth High School. I'm not good at names anymore, but the science teacher, was that?
Sean Shields,
that's right. And a number of these people, I get their names, I'll get lost. But
Ellen Williams was there.
Yeah, she's from Appleton, Wisconsin. I hired her there. We put that faculty together, and it was a pretty darn good faculty. And we never got away from the idea that we were just farm people, that we weren't fancy, we were going to do the best we could. We liked each other, and we're going to get along. And that kind of went that way. And we really built a camaraderie there that I think still exists.
We were telling this, I forget who I was talking to, a story about the Epworth High School. We opened that year, and a lot of it wasn't done until after Christmas, the cafeteria.
That's
and
right.
The gym and all that. But the home ec room was done, and we were going to have a little social group. And it might have been a Christmas party or something, and we're going to use the home ec room. And the home ec teacher, I think she was only there 1 year, was very possessive of that room. And she said, you're not going to use it. Well, Buck was the principal, and you know who won out on that one. Because we all had young kids, and we brought them, I think we had Santa Claus and Delight.
Well, Ralph Buckman is a story in itself. I mean, he was a terrific person. Buck was the most loved principal I think we've ever had. He never hit any kid or was mean to any kid in his life. But if he was really upset, he'd get on that PA system, and he had a great big yardstick, and he on that first counter out there, he'd get talking, and then he'd slam that thing down, and it'd ring all over the room, and he said, everybody be quiet. But Buck was, if a kid was hurting or had troubles, or he was there, he was the most helpful person you could get. He literally loved kids and lived to help them.
I remember when you interviewed me on the street in front of Piasta High School, that the one thing I remember you say, well, Ralph Buck will be your principal, and he's a peach of a guy.
Yes, he was. Yeah.
I remember that to this day.
Buck and I worked together for 18 years there, and
do you remember the time of? Oh, excuse me, but Chucky Breitbach, you remember that story? I think he was acting. Well, his office, Wayne's office, was where
the principal's office.
The principal's office, and Buck's office was on the left side. Yeah. So he was right there, and we had a little kid from Cascade who was having a little problem, and Buck had explained to him quite a few times.
Yeah.
And so he got sent to the office again for the 90th time. Buck lifts him up. He's a little lifts him up over the counter.
Slid him down the road.
Threw him to Wayne.
He did. He really did.
You take care of this guy. I wasn't there to witness that, but I remember hearing that story.
That's a little guy that Buck was chewing him out, and while he was doing it, he stole Buck's wishwash.
I think he had pickpocketed the school, the county social worker or something. he was a dandy. No.
Well, so then, I'm just thinking ahead a little bit. At some point in the mid-70s, an issue that collective bargaining was going to come in.
Yes.
So you want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, that was, it was the mid-70s, I think. And it was a strange thing. You know, we went to a lot of meetings, and everybody was kind of afraid of the thing, both the teachers and the administrators. Well, it was going to be bad. And some of these speakers made a living out of telling all the horror stories that happened. And the first contract with the teachers was a hard contract. We talked every issue out, and it was some disagreement, and we didn't know each other, literally, as a bargaining group. And the first year was probably the worst, and we got, I think in my tenure there, we got to trust each other pretty well, and we knew it was a process that had to happen. And who was the lady? She was head of the union there for years. She lived in Dubuque.
Well, Mary Lersman was later, but...
She and I would get on the phone together.
Lois Tyson?
Lois Tyson.
Okay.
And we'd swear at each other, and we'd hang up at each other, and then we'd get together, and everything was just fine again. But it was part of the process. And
so I was on the first team that negotiated, I was the secretary. I had to keep the minutes, and we had 34 meetings. And Buck and me, and I think Louie Hine, and of course, like the union had a master contract that the NEA put out, which said that who's going to check the waste basket to see if there's a bomb in there, and the teachers didn't want to be the one to do it, and how many off-site parking spaces would you have, and how many restrooms you had. They had this book, but somehow we got a hold of that. So, and then they had a crazy contract with everything you can imagine, and then we'd meet, and Louie put BS on there, big, that's BS, yes. But 34 meetings with him, and Buck, of course, was used to running the school in his own way, and now he's got to sign the teachers. They can only work one or two ball games. It was just a time of change. It was
hard. He used to go up, and when they were negotiating, he'd write no on the board. Now, and he turned to me and said, "What don't you understand about that?"
Yeah, those were tough years. But like you said,
one of the things, I don't take any genius to do this, but something that I did that I never regretted is I never went to the table.
That was smart. Yeah.
And I think it was. And we hired people to do that. And I always sat in the next room. Went through a lot of sessions where but they come in, talk to me, and then at the end when we were right down to the last thing, I could come in and maybe close out a few things.
It didn't get personal that way. I mean, it was bad enough as it was.
Right.
So that was good.
What do you, I was looking at the total picture, and I don't know, it might be a hard question. What were like, what did I write down, the five or six top accomplishments of the district or yourself?
Well, I think probably the hardest thing was...
John? Yeah, we're interviewing.